Dionisio at the plate, he's over to today. Swakowski, the big right hander, lets it go. It's right down Broadway. Dionisio lets it fly, and it's... Oh, it's raining now.
It's time for Rain Delay Theater with Jeremy Dionisio and Jack Swakowski.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rain Delay Theater, the podcast where two bums talk about other bums. This week, it's going to be just one bum coming at ya. I'm Jack Swakowski. Jeremy and I decided that on weeks where we don't have time to get together to record an episode, one of us will just record a little short mini-sode, either of a game maybe we went to over the past week ourselves, or updates from around the league, etc. Well, it happens that today is Tuesday, April 16th. And I went to the Chicago White Sox game by myself last night, Monday, April 15th, when they played the Kansas City Royals at Guaranteed Rate Field. I had let Jeremy know I was coming, but he couldn't work, so I decided to go by myself, kind of a day before, a night before decision. I wasn't sure if I was going to graph, but I figured, screw it, if I'm going, I might as well graph. So I scraped together as many cards as I could find with as little effort as I could possibly put in. So I, from the tops of my pile, I picked 11 guys who were currently on the Royals active roster. 11 out of 25 ain't bad. And that was what I brought to the game on Monday night. I went to the game right after work, and I got there at gates. As I was entering the stadium, I had bought my ticket for $4 on StubHub, and the guy scanned my ticket at the gate, and he showed me his phone, the thing he used to scan it, and he said, "Hey, so you can sit in either section 114 or section 150." Now my section was like 552 in the upper deck, and I was kind of nonplussed. I'd never encountered that type of thing before, so I said, "Yeah, sure, you can switch my ticket to 150." And he goes, "Oh, well, I don't need to switch it. You can just sit wherever you want. We're closing the upper deck tonight." So I thought, okay, great. You know, I don't have to go through the whole song and dance of trying to figure out which section doesn't have an usher in it, so I can sit there in the lower. I can just go in. Great. which is what I figured it would be on a Monday night with the White Sox sitting at 2-13. So, as I mentioned, I was going to go graph. So I figured, okay, well, I will head over to the first base dugout and try to get the Royals. Now, I had entered in gate 5, which I believe is the outfield gate. So I had a little bit of a walk to get there. But get there I did. Unfortunately, there were some people who had gotten there before me, Royals fans. There were a lot of them. By the time I got there, there were probably a dozen people huddled up by the dugout. Now, where they were kind of right by where the on-deck circle is. Some of them were close enough where if the game had actually been going on, they would have been rubbing elbows with Matt Quatraro, the Royals manager. How sometimes the manager kind of hangs out right by those steps. So that was how close people were allowed to get. Now, I didn't exactly hustle to the first base dugout, but I got there pretty fast. I got there within maybe 3 or 4 minutes of the gates opening. Maybe 3 minutes. I got there fast. But there were already all these people there, and there was one guy in particular who was planted there. He was in, if there's something better than the catbird seat that Jeremy and I allude to when we do Cubs games, that was what this guy had. This guy was practically standing in the on-deck circle. He was wearing a Royals hoodie, and he had a Royals hat on, and I just thought, man, like, this guy must be a diehard Royals fan. He knew just where to go. Probably follows the team around everywhere. Like, this guy really, really wants these Royals. Like, he really must like the Royals. And, you know, I'm trying to get my bearings. I'm trying to figure out a way to get in there. And so, you know, probably 2 or 3 minutes later, the guy turns around for the first time. And, of course, it's fucking Dennis. Dennis got there, you know, earlier than anybody else, and he got the best spot. So, of course, it's Dennis. It's Dennis right there. I was thinking, is Dennis the preeminent grapher in Chicago? Jeremy and I, at this point, we've seen the entire graphing scene. We know all the faces, and Dennis is the most prominent everywhere. He's always there. you know, wherever there is graphing to be done, Dennis is going to be there. Now, maybe Anthony is and his crew are a close second. We'll get to them a little later on. But, yeah. But anyway, Dennis. So, that's him right there, taking up the best spot. So, I had told Jeremy, and I think I said this on the podcast a few weeks ago, I had a dream. I had a dream about Bobby Witt, and that Bobby Witt was signing for everybody, and I didn't get him. Well, Witt was taking batting practice when I got down there, and of course everyone had their eyes on him. He was the guy everybody wanted. He was the reason half of those people were there. And I was so far back, I knew it in my gut that he was going to come over and sign, and I wasn't going to get him. It was my dream manifest. I knew it was going to happen. And sure enough, it did. Witt came over. He signed a few. Of course, he signed for Dennis. And he signed a few other ones, too. I mean, he probably signed 10 autographs. But I was just too far back. I tried to get my card in there, but I couldn't. It didn't happen. So he signed a few, and then he went into the dugout. And if he came back and signed more before the game, I wouldn't have known. Because I did not stay that long down there. But, yep, Witt signed and I missed him, which is okay. There's other guys I would want more than him, but, you know, you graft the Royals, you want Bobby Witt. So, getting Bobby Witt put Dennis in high spirits. Now, after Witt left, probably half the people left with him. They all went away. So it was, at that point, it was kind of just the hardcore graphers. Couple guys about mine and Jeremy's age that I'd never seen before. Dennis. And yeah, that was about it. But anyway, we were hanging out down there. And I still didn't have great positioning. Like, these guys were there and they were in it to win it. But getting Witt's autograph put Dennis in high spirits. And his personality started to come out a little bit. So he was talking to these other graphers who he obviously knew. He spotted me at one point and nodded to me, but he obviously knew these other guys pretty well, so at one point, he turns to one of them, and I think they were making fun of another grapher. I don't know who. I should say Dennis was making fun of another grapher, and he starts to say, he gets a real, like, hoity-toity type of body language, and he goes, he says, "Oh, I'm gonna go with Steve. We're gonna have some martinis." And, you know, Jeremy and I, we want to have faith in Dennis. We want to believe that he has multitudes. And he likes a broad range of comedy. But the more evidence that I see, I just think that kind of goes in the opposite direction. But, hey, he's got all season to prove me and Jeremy wrong. But anyway, you know, the evidence isn't great so far. So, yeah, he was in high spirits. At one point, some guy was talking about Hunter Renfro, and he's like, "Yeah, I got him when he was with the Rancho Cucamonga Chihuahuas." And Dennis goes, "The Chimichangas?" And so that's just, I don't understand why that's funny or what the joke is there, but that's what you sign up for when Dennis is in good spirits. Anyway, for those who had good positioning and who admittedly had brought more cards than I did, it was a very fruitful day. Most of the players who were in the vicinity of the graphers signed. I'm talking Garrett Hampson, Kyle Isbell, MJ Melendez, Hunter Renfro, Alec Marsh, Jeremy Guthrie was there. I guess he does TV for them. He's a guy I wish I would have brought, but I didn't. I got Angel Zerpa and Jordan Lyles. But I had to really push in there to get these guys. Dennis was firmly planted in his spot and would not move. Let me see if I can describe this to you. You know how when the mafia wants to kill somebody, they'll like take a boat out into the ocean, you know, and drive it out like about a mile, and they'll put cement bricks on the guy they want to kill's feet, and then they'll just drop him in the ocean. It was almost like Dennis had those cement bricks on, and no matter how much you pushed him, he had him on his feet, and like no matter how much you pushed him, he just wasn't gonna budge. There were some little kids who wanted to get in there to get autographs, and Dennis would not let them through. He would kind of let them next to him, but he wouldn't give up his spot an inch. He wouldn't give anybody an inch. So I tried to get Lyles, And everybody at that point, too, Brady Singer came over. And so it just kind of became madness. And I had a Brady Singer card, but I already had my Lyles card out. And Lyles is a guy I'd gotten on a scorecard about 2 years ago. And I wanted to close the loop on that one. So I wanted Lyles. I had to, like, get in there, and I was trying to... It was an ugly scene, man. I had to thread the needle. I had to put my card through Dennis's body and, like, another grapher's. And, like, Lyles had to, like... I handed him the card, and he actually had to look up, and I had to make eye contact with him. And I think he looked up just to figure out who the heck's card he was even signing. Anyway, I got him. I got Zerpa after much, you know, after much intrigue, after much to do. I ended up getting those guys, which is great. And then eventually, everybody just went back, and they went into the clubhouse. The only guy who didn't go in the clubhouse was Cole Reagans. And he stayed kind of by the stairs leading into the clubhouse. Jeremy Guthrie was in the dugout at that point, too. And those guys were just talking. And, I mean, they must have talked for 15 minutes. And you wonder what the hell these guys are talking about. Are they talking about pitching? Are they talking about their hobbies? I don't know. As someone who used to have a job captioning telephone calls, I can tell you that most people's conversations are boring. So whatever they were talking about, it probably you think, oh man, I'd love to be a fly on the wall, these two like baseball players talking to each other. But no, you probably wouldn't. What they were probably talking about boring stuff. But anyway, we were waiting around for Reagans. He was the last guy there, and you know, we thought on the off chance that he would sign and not just head straight into the clubhouse because he wasn't pitching that night. We figured we'd wait for him. So we're waiting him out, and you know, we're all kind of just hanging out, and there's a lot of dead time. And so I don't know who brought the subject up. I think it may have been Dennis himself. But he started talking about the campfire milkshake. Now, if you guys haven't heard of the campfire milkshake, just Google it. You'll see it. You'll find a picture of it. It's this chocolate milkshake in an old-fashioned, like, malt glass that you'd get at, like, a Back to the Future 1950-style diner. It's very photogenic. It's dipped. The glass is dipped in chocolate, so there's, like, frozen chocolate all around the rim of the glass. It's the it's basically just a regular chocolate milkshake, but it has like graham cracker bits on it and marshmallows on the top. Anyway, the Sox posted this thing on Instagram, and it went viral. And I was that day I was reading an article in The Athletic about this milkshake. It was on the White Sox Athletic page, but it was like a long article just about this milkshake. And the premise of the article was that, like, you know, the team is terrible, but at least they have this milkshake. So I cannot think of a more White Sox thing than nobody is talking about the actual product on the field, but, like, they are talking about just this milkshake that they're offering at in one section of the park. Ridiculous. But anyway, Dennis offered up his thoughts on it. First of all, he called it that Milky Way thing, which, you know... I guess figures that he wouldn't know what it was called. But then he said, yeah, I saw somebody with one of those things. It looked fucking good. So that's Dennis's review of the campfire milkshake. It looked fucking good. They should put that as a quote on you know, on their Instagram. Just like two thumbs up. So that being said, while we're on the subject of this. I did, as the game was going on, I did see a lot of people with that milkshake. I will get one for myself at some point this year. Tonight just wasn't the night to do it. I actually don't know where they sell it. I do know it's only in specific areas of the park. And per the Athletic article, they can only make 400 of these a night just because they take a long time to prep. So that's also classic White Sox. They're advertising this thing. It's the one thing everybody's talking about and wants. And once summer hits and they are getting 25, 30,000 people for weekend games, only 400 people are going to be able to get this thing. So you're probably going to have a couple thousand people who are upset at more than just the product on the field. So great job with that. Dennis knew all the graphers, like I said. So at one point, while we're waiting for Reagans, he turns to one of the graphers and he said, "Hey, where's Anthony?" And I was like, he can't be talking about Anthony. But sure enough, I think he was, because the guy who apparently knew Anthony was like, he's doing the Hawks. And Dennis was like, the Blackhawks? And then the guy makes a bird flapping motion and he goes, "No, the Atlanta Hawks." Because I guess the Atlanta Hawks are in town this week. The play-in game, the NBA play-in game versus the Bulls is tomorrow. So the Hawks are in town. So Anthony, must have been our Anthony, went to the Hawks hotel to try to get Atlanta Hawks autographs. Note to Jeremy, next time we see Anthony, we actually have to, we should ask him if the, that actually bears fruit when he goes to try to get these NBA teams, because he did it for the Bulls Ring of Honor, and now he's doing it for the Hawks, so that seems to kind of be his thing. So we did get an Anthony mention, which is why I, you know, mentioned him in the same breath as Dennis, as far as being the, you know, the most prominent, the most famous graffer in Chicago. To close the last Dennis thing, as I mentioned, he was in a big mood. As we were waiting for Reagan's, the ballpark music, they started playing one of those songs that's done only on a synthesizer, or it sounds like it was done on GarageBand. It's one of those hype songs, you know, one of those songs that goes, you know the ones I'm talking about if you've ever been to a sports game. So anyway, one of these songs is playing, and Dennis starts singing along with it. And I'm not going to attempt to recreate what the singing was, just because, okay, I'll just do it. He was like, a bloop ba da di boop ba a beat a ump ump ump. What he was doing was not in tune with the song at all, and he was making random noises. And as he was doing it, he did that dance that people do when they're pretending like they ride a horse. Jeremy is either not going to believe this, or he's going to be really, really sad that he missed it. Dennis was singing and dancing to one of those, you know, synthesizer hype songs and doing the horse dance. So that's what Dennis gets like when he gets Bobby Witt Jr.'s autograph. When Dennis feasts. And I'll go back to the thing where, like, he was not letting these kids get in front of him at all. There's an expression, leaders eat last. I think the opposite of that is Dennis eats first. Dennis might let you, like, get an autograph, but he's going to make sure he gets his. So, anyway, Reagan's eventually goes downstairs. He doesn't sign for anybody. And then Dennis starts asking the guys, he's like, "Yeah, are you leaving?" And all these graphers there, they're all like, yeah, you know, we're getting out of here. And Dennis was like, "Yeah, I'm going too." And it really blows my mind that these graphers are so into getting these autographs. They have everybody's card. They want to get any autograph they can. But then they leave the game. They had to buy a ticket to get in here. It's not like graffing at the bus or at a minor league game waiting outside the stadium and waiting outside the locker room for them to come out. You had to buy a ticket to get in here, and you are making the choice to go. But you're getting baseball players' autographs. Don't you want to see them do the thing that they're famous for? That would be like if I went to some type of comic convention and they had the cast of Doctor Who there, and I got all of the... I've never seen Doctor Who before, but if I was, like, really into getting their autographs despite having not, you know, the cast of that show, despite having never even seen what they do, like, how could you want baseball players' autographs but have no interest in watching the baseball game? It baffles me. It doesn't make any sense. I think that probably the only way that Dennis has been able to keep his marriage alive is by just promising his wife that he'll graph, but then he won't stay for the whole game. And, you know, more power to him, I guess. But I just, I don't know. I don't get it. And to quote my friend's dad, I have to get one of those in there. But to quote my friend's dad, if I ever get to that point, take me out back and shoot me. I'm there for the games. I'm there for the graphs, but I also want to see the game too. I'm also very interested in watching the game. And watch the game I did. It was an interesting one to see. Nick Nastrini made his debut for the White Sox. I think they picked him up in the Lance Lynn, Joe Kelly trade that they made with the Dodgers. Nastrini looked good. He looked like he belonged. He pitched 5 innings, gave up only 2 runs. Didn't seem intimidated at all to be on a big league mound. And he got the classic White Sox experience. Nobody in the upper deck and no run support from his team. The White Sox ended up dropping that one 2-0 to fall to a record of 2-14, which I think is the worst start in their franchise history. They've been shut out 6 times this season already, through 16 games. That ties them with the Brooklyn Super Bas. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but before the Brooklyn Dodgers became the Dodgers, they were this other team. And that is the worst offensive start, the most shutouts or whatever, since the Brooklyn Super Bas in 1907. So the White Sox are in some historic territory. Prediction, folks, I believe they will win between 40 to 50 games because it's almost impossible not to do that. They've got a few good bullpen pieces in Leisure and Kopech and Schuster, or Schuster, or however you say his name. So they'll be competitive enough. They'll keep them in games. You know, in the White Sox, the players they have, Sheets, Vaughn, Benintendi, you know, Robert and Eloy when they're healthy, Tommy Pham when he comes up, which is a whole other thing. Those guys will hit just enough to win them about, you know, 40 or 50 games. But I still think 100 losses is inevitable. Okay, well, we're at about 20 minutes. So with all that being said, Jeremy and I will be going to the Marlins versus Cubs game this coming Friday. So that'll be fun. We'll have all the action for you there. But until that time, I am Jack Swakowski. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. And we'll see you on the next episode of Rain Delay Theater. Have a good night.